Should we change cables? So I'm going to talk today, or the next hour at least, about the design differences between iOS and Windows Store apps. It says Windows 8, but it's more particular about Windows Store apps. There's a lot to cover, so I'm going to I'm going to accept questions at the end of the session, but I prefer not to answer anything in between. So I'm going to introduce myself. Obviously, first, I'm going to talk about the design principles. Going to take a deep dive into the translation between an iOS app to a Windows Store app. And finally, I'm going to talk a little bit about how to create an innovative design, because most designs look more or less the same. They're very squarry. So who am I? I'm Bart Kleis. I'm the creative director of Ratio Interactive. And Ratio Interactive is a mobile development and design company based in Pioneer Square, Seattle, just a block from Zynga for the people who are familiar with Pioneer Square. It's like a 50-plus company, 50-plus employee company. We do design development across all platforms, Android, iOS, Windows 8, obviously, but we also do websites. So we created 27 apps in the past year that are live on the Windows 8 store right now, which is pretty impressive, I think. For pretty big brands like Parents, iCookbook, we did Nature Space, which is a small startup based out of Chicago. The New Yorker, GQ, Glamour, iCookbook, Sports Illustrator since a week, it's live as well. We've done an app for NASDAQ. We basically done an app for all the Condé Nast magazines and the Next Issue Media magazines as well. About a year ago, I think it was November last year, I was invited to the Microsoft Redmond campus to design a first non-internal app. And why did Microsoft invite me there is because the company I work for, Ratio Interactive, designed this iPad app called iCookbook. Now, iCookbook is a pretty popular app in the iOS store, and it has been built for, obviously, for iOS, so for the iPad and also for the iPhone. We also did a version for Android. We also did a version for WebOS. I don't really know whether that's still around. And of course, we're also going to do a version for the Windows 8. And why did we decide to do a version for Windows 8? And it has been already explained a little bit this morning, but the market potential is really large. There's a lot of users using Windows installations right now that are going to convert into Windows 8. We already reach a lot of users on the iOS store and through Android, but there's this other group of users that we can't reach who are now on Windows. The second reason we decided to design and develop a Windows 8 app very early in the game was because of this first mover opportunity. If you're the first one in the store, there's not too much competition in the store, so you're the first app that people will install. So iCookbook was the first cooking app that was available, I think, almost like 6 to 7 months ago. And using that opportunity, it's also pre-installed on a couple of PC manufacturers. So if you're fast, if you believe in the platform, you can grab a lot of users there. There's a lot of discoverability in the store, even up to today. So let's have a look at what I've designed the first day I was at Microsoft. And that's a long time ago. There was no documentation around. There was no manuals online. There were only a couple of internal Windows 8 apps, and that's about it. So I had to base myself on what I saw on the platform. But before we start analyzing this design, we should get to know the Windows design principles. And one of those principles, and we already explained it this morning, is content before Chrome. And in order to understand, we have to know what Chrome is. And everybody knows Jacob Nielsen. He always tells it very well. Chrome is everything that is not your content. And on iOS, it's intermingled with your content. It's our buttons, search menus, for example, tab bars. That's all Chrome. It helps you navigating through that content. Now, let's have a look at the iPad app for iCookbook. You can clearly see there's like a status bar on top with the battery indication, your wireless indication. There's a search field. Search field is not content. It's just a search field. You have a button here, and you have a tab menu. Now, if you look at the Windows 8 app, it's all gone. There's no status bar, there's no search fields, no buttons, no navigation, no tab menu. It's purely your content, nothing else. A second design principle that you have to understand in order to design good Windows 8 apps or Windows Store apps is fast and fluid. And that means a couple of things. From a programming standpoint, you're going to program in that way that you use asynchronous loading so that your content is available once you open a page. But from a design standpoint, it means that you're going to put a lot of content up front on your homepage from which people can easily scroll like they're just watching a magazine and browse and discover your content. So most Windows 8 apps, most homepages of Windows 8 apps will be pretty wide and will have this kind of panoramic view like you can see here. The third and last design principle I want to explain to you is authentically digital. I already touched that a little bit this morning. But authentically digital means that we say bye-bye to the skeuomorphic design that iOS has been using for the past years. If you look at this calendar app, and it's the same example as this morning, but now I have like a nice comparison here. At right, you see a lot of textures, a lot of references to real-life tangible objects. If you look at the left part of the screen, and if you look at the calendar app on Windows 8, it's all gone. It's purely your content. Now let's have a look at how that looks like on the iCookbook app. Again, at right, you see there's a lot of things going on, you see a lot of navigation, and at left, it's kind of calm and just your content. Now, to go really in specific about the authentically digital, you can analyze this iOS design here, and you see a wooden texture in the background that refers to your working place in your kitchen. You see a handwritten font refers to your grandma writing those recipes on the little note for you. You see paper, you see corkboard, you even see a little pin here. It's pretty typical for iOS apps, and they look great, but Windows thinks that those things get a little bit in your way to discover your content. Now, if you look at the Windows 8 counterpart, you see large thin fonts, you see large immersive photography, you see solid colors, and you see simple shapes. Now, let's go back to the original design I did at day one at Microsoft, and let's see whether that complies to those three design principles. Content before Chrome. What do you guys think? Did I succeed in doing that?
No?
Correct. I didn't do that well. The only piece of content you see here is a picture in the background. And it's even debatable whether that's actionable. It's debatable whether you can tap that and can go to that recipe. For the rest, it's all Chrome. You see buttons, you see navigation, a search button here, a title. These are just pieces of text that don't communicate any recipe. It's not a recipe title. It's not a recipe picture. What do you guys think about fast and fluid? Did I do that well? No, I didn't do that well. What I tried to do at day one is try to fit everything in that one screen. I was a little bit afraid of like that navigation, that horizontal scrolling. It's the typical kind of fear that in the web exists as well, like the above the fold kind of fear. Like people are not going to scroll down and not even discover my content. So I tried to stuff everything on that homepage, and I didn't leverage the horizontal scrolling concept that Windows 8 is pretty famous for. So unfortunately, failed there. What about authentically digital? Think I did that well? I personally think I did that well. I don't see any like references to like textures or to like tangible objects. It's purely photography, copy or typography, and some squares. So at least out of the three design principles, I did one right in day one. But a successful day, I think. Now let's have a look at the second iteration of this app. So I understood I had to push more content forward, so I used a lot of images of recipes on this home screen. I still made a little mistake using those see more buttons at the bottom. And why is that? Because I didn't understand the concept that people could tap on those hub titles. So as a user, you can click or tap on recent cuisine theme and my shopping list to dive into that section. I was not aware of that, and I didn't have a tablet at I couldn't use a tablet, so I just didn't do that. So that's wrong in this iteration. Let's go to iteration 3. It's already a little bit better. So you see a lot of content there, see a lot of recipe titles. One mistake I made here is adding this search button on the home page. But eventually we ended up doing this version. This is the final version of iCookbook, and I comply to all the 3 design guidelines here. So you can clearly see that there's large photography, some recipes are hero images here, some other recipes only referred to by title are a little bit less important, that's why there's no image at left. And then we have those indications of 22 recipes, 423 recipes, to indicate there's more content behind that hub and to invite users to click that hub button or text to continue. So once you select a cuisine, like Asia, for example, you get this grid of recipes that fall in that category. And you see there, I use large images, simple shapes, simple red backgrounds, a little slanted edge here to create this kind of unique feeling, and a kind of darkened background at the bottom, at the back. So this is the recipe detail once you pick one of those tiles. Again, you start with a very immersive large image, followed by a large copy, and then there's a lot of content at the right side of the screen where you can quickly scroll to read the recipe details, the ingredients, and stuff like that. Now, they used this app because that was one of the first non-internal Windows Store apps. They used this app on the Mobile World Congress in Barcelona to present the consumer preview of Windows 8. I was pretty proud of that. So now let's dive into the actual topic, the iOS to Windows Store app conversion. And you can find all this information on the windowsstore.com/designer website. And if you go to design case studies and then you pick out iPad to Windows Store app, you can reference what I'm going to talk about today. So in order to explain that translation, we came up with an app, a fictive app, called Photo Journal. And we designed that for iOS, and we also designed that for Windows 8. So this is what we're going to cover in this section. So we're going to talk about the homepage of Windows 8, what is semantic zoom, how does the action bar work, search and share settings, selecting items, screen orientation, snap view, and live tiles. You should be all kind of familiar with that because of the talk this morning with Aaron. So let's talk about a homepage. If you look at iPad homepages, most homepages have this tab menu at the bottom. And the tab menu has iconography that explains you can go to this section by clicking on this icon, and then you'll see that piece of content. On Windows 8, it's a little different. There is no concept of a tab bar at the bottom. You use hubs instead, content hubs. And those content hubs work a little bit in the same way as your tab bar, but the difference is you don't use an icon to represent your content. You use your actual content. So if I laid out this iPad app here to kind of a little bit explain you this concept of tab bars at the bottom. So here you see photos and comments. And at the right, you see the comments screen that you end up once you tap the comments button. Again, all those comments, all this rich information is kind of hidden behind this little icon with the caption of comments. Now, let's start cutting up this iPad design, and let's see where we end up as a Windows Store app. So the first thing we're going to do is remove this texture you see in the background. It's maybe a little bit hard to see on the screen here. We have this nice paper effect that refers to a tangible vintage album that you might have at home. So let's get rid of that and replace it with a solid color. So I picked a solid color out of that texture, so you can have this kind of brownish effect as well. Now let's get rid of all the chrome. Let's get rid of the status bar at the top. Let's get rid of the menu. Let's get rid of the title bar and see what happens. Bam. You already see that the apps get a little bit more room to breathe. there's more air around it. There's less confusion. It's all about your content, your focus to your content. Now, we still have some Chrome in here. Part is that this kind of pagination effect at the bottom, and you also see the stacking metaphor. Each tile on the screen represents a month out of your photo library. So there are multiple pictures in that month, obviously. And iOS solves it in that way of using a piece of Chrome, a kind of a design element, to indicate there's more behind that small thumbnail. But let's get rid of that, and also let's get rid of the pagination control on the bottom. There you go, it's gone. We're still left with some photo frames here, photo frames that can refer to, let's say, a Polaroid picture, but it doesn't really add too much to the content again, so let's get rid of photo frames as well. Hopla. Now, all the content is on this one page, and Windows Store apps are known to be really wide, to leverage that horizontal scrolling. So let's reflow this content, and let's make it a very panoramic page. So that means, of course, that part of my content is going to be hidden behind the right edge. But now let's see how all the space we have available here. We can do a lot of stuff here with that space, a lot of stuff in terms of content, putting content forward. So let's blow up the photos. And now the photos are not really thumbnails anymore. They actually become real. They can tell a story. It's not a representation of what you have taken in that month. It's a real story. So that story needs a title. So let's add some titles there. And we still have a lot of white space at the bottom that we can leverage to bring in more content to the front of this app. So let's bring in two more photo tiles from that month. So you immediately see you have three hubs here. You have December, November, October, and you have way more content up front than you had on the iOS app. Now let's fix the titles at the top. Let's replace it with a large, nice, thin font. And now let's get the comments back into this view, because we got rid of the tab bar at the bottom. Now, where are we going to put the comments? It's pretty easy. We're just going to introduce a new hub, and we're going to put it in front of those month's hubs. So again, this kind of acts just like this tab bar. You can click on recent comments, or you can click on this month or November to dive into that section. But it's not represented anymore with icons in the bottom. It's represented by the actual content that lives in that hub. So still little things that we need to fix here. Let's add a little logo. Let's move this title to the left. Bam. And there's one last fix we have to do here, switch the tablet into a Windows 8 tablet. And bam, the Windows 8 app is done. So I didn't really do too much. I cut away a lot of Chrome. I increased photos and titles, and then add a little bit more content to the front. That's all. It's actually pretty easy if you look at it. And this is how it looks like from a panoramic standpoint. So there's a lot of content hidden on the left and right edges of the screen. And the problem with that is that if you want to go to, let's say, you want to go to October 2010, you have to scroll until you find that. You can't scroll too fast, because then maybe you're past that hub. So in order to solve that, Microsoft came up with a semantic zoom. And the way to enable that is you pinch in and you get into semantic zoom. So let's skip that one. So you pinch in and you immediately switch to semantic zoom. And semantic zoom is actually the same page that you were on, but it's reduced. The content is reduced. A lot of details are left out. You don't see any pictures anymore. You don't see any titles anymore. It just shows you which months are available in a panoramic view. And you can still scroll in that semantic zoom, but that's the only thing you can do. You can scroll and tap. You cannot semantic zoom again into this view, for example. There's no control, so you cannot swipe up the app bar, for example. It is purely an alternative view of the page that you were on. And you don't always have to design or develop a semantic zoom. It really depends on how large that page is, that underlying page is. If that page is pretty small and you can quickly scroll and find your content, I don't think it's necessary. But once you have, like, let's say, a whole address book with 500 names, you're going to scroll a lot, then you probably need semantic zoom to navigate into that underlying panoramic view. If you compare that to the iPad doesn't really have a concept of semantic zoom, so it's mostly solved with this kind of drop-down menu where you can jump to different sections into your app. Now let's talk a little bit about the actions and the actions bar. Actions on iPad mostly go in the top title bar, sometimes at the bottom title bar. And Windows 8, they all go into the bottom app bar. It's very easy. The bottom app bar is hidden by default, and you can display it by swiping from the bottom, as we learned this morning. Very simple gesture. Again, when you purchase a Surface tablet and you install it, you get a little onboarding screen there that teaches you how to discover those app bars. And those app bars, especially the bottom and the top app bar, they are common across all the other apps. So you shouldn't be afraid that the user won't find it. It's a typical fear that designers and developers have, like, oh, but people are not going to know where those actions are. Don't be afraid of that. People know that there's an action bar on any app they install, any Windows Store app they install, and they know that they can find those actions in there. So on the previous page, we were on the homepage of the photo app. There were not too many actions to do there. You can only upload a photo from that page. But if we dive into a specific detail page in this photo app and we load this beautiful picture of Barcelona, there are way more actions available. And we place the actions that are global, actions that you can perform on any screen of this app, to the right, and we put contextual actions to the left of your screen. So contextual actions in this case is adding a comment, rotating this photo, downloading it, or deleting it. Now, before you go too wild with this app bar, there are a couple of things that I don't want you to do. Don't put any navigation in there. Don't put search in there. Don't put share in there. We learned this morning that we have those charm bars to use those functionalities. And people learned by onboarding on the Surface or by using other apps that they can fall back on that charm bar that you can swipe out from the right. So there's no need to repeat that functionality in your app bar. Actually, if you even do it and you want to be featured on the store, you probably will not get featured on the store. So I advise you not to put any search or share buttons or even navigation into this bottom app bar. Now, a bottom app bar sometimes has a companion app bar at the top. So you can have two app bars at the same time. Wherever you swipe from, if you swipe from the bottom edge or you swipe from the top edge, it doesn't matter. The two app bars will appear at the same time. So it's not that you swipe from the top app bar and from the top that only the top app bar is going to appear. And if you swipe from the bottom, only the bottom app bar is going to appear. You as a designer or developer decide whether you need or want a top or bottom bar. And then it will be shown once you swipe from the top or the bottom. So why do you use this top app bar for? Is a good question. So in this case, in this app, I've placed the back button in it and the title. Why is that? Because once you land on this page of this photo of Barcelona, you only want to experience the photo. You don't want to see the title. You know that you clicked on Barcelona. You don't want to see your back button. You just want to enjoy the photo, and then you can swipe to your other photos, to the next photos. So there's no need to add a button on top of that photo that kind of takes away the focus from that photo. So you can place, for example, the back button into your top app bar. Again, most apps won't do that. Most apps will place it in their content. But if you want to focus purely on your content, you can put it in the top app bar. Other usage for top app bars are navigation. Maybe there's a page scrubber. Maybe you're viewing a PDF document and you want to scrub to page number 30, for example. You're going to put it in the top app bar. Maybe you have previous next buttons. Let's say you're making a certain PowerPoint app, for example. You're going to put that in the top app bar. Maybe you have a table of contents for your document. Again, that's navigation. You put that in the top app bar. So actions go in the bottom app bar, and navigation goes into the top app bar. So this is kind of a comparison between iPad and the Windows 8 app. So most actions on the iPad app will go into the top title bar, like this plus to add a picture. Again, on Windows 8, you place it all in the bottom. Now let's talk a little bit about search and share. Sharing on iOS, and already has been referenced this morning, requires quite some programming. You have to know which social networks you want to share with. You have to install specific SDKs for Facebook and Twitter. It's not completely true in iOS 6. You probably know that better than I do, but iOS 6 is a little easier to integrate with Twitter and Facebook. But if you want to support Instagram or any other new social network, you have to program against that. The cool thing about Windows 8 is that you don't have to care about what you want to share with. If those apps are available on your tablet or on your platform, you can share with those applications. So share goes into or lives into the right charm that you open by swiping from the right edge. So once you swipe this charm open, you see these five icons and a black background. You cannot change the color. You cannot change the icons here. This is built in into the Windows Store, Windows 8 platform. This is consistent across all the apps that users use. So once they discover where search and share is, they will discover that in your app as well. Now let's click on share and then see what happens. So once you click share, the share charm opens and you can start sharing in any application that can receive your share. We talked about a photo app here, so you can, for example, share with mail or with Facebook if Facebook would have an app. You can share it, for example, Twitterama, you can tweet it, you can do all kinds of stuff with a photo. Any app that can receive a photo can use your content. Now you immediately see that the background color of this pane here is green. And that's because the user can set a theme color. So once they onboard on their Surface, once they install the Windows 8, they can choose a theme color. And that will indicate the color that you have in the screen. It could be purple, could be blue. The user decided that it should be green in this case. So again, you don't have any control over the background color of this share charm. Now let's have a look at iPad, how iPad manages share. It mostly lives at the top title bar with this kind of action menu, and you have all kinds of buttons that open up share screens to share from. So let's have a look at those share screens. this share screen, it's fictive obviously because Facebook app is not available yet, but this is how a Facebook share screen would look like. So this page comes from the Facebook app. It doesn't come from your app. So you don't have any control how it looks like. It's Facebook that decides how this page is laid out and how big your thumbnail is, for example. On iOS, you build in that SDK, and then that will indicate how your page or your share page will look like. You have more control on iOS to design that share page. Now let's swipe again from the right edge and let's go to search. Search lives there as well. Let's tap it. And now you can search against your app because that's enabled by default here. And you can also search against other apps using the same keyword. You can do a couple of things here. You can load content on the fly while you're typing. So while you're typing BAR Barcelona, you can display all kinds of photos that start with BAR, or you can just simply have an autofill on the bottom of this search field where people can tap on Barcelona and then go and then load your search screen. So there's a lot of things you can do here. You can either design a specific or develop a specific search page. You can also throw the user into your homepage, for example, and then filter that homepage. So a lot of flexibility there for developers and designers. Now let's talk about settings. And that's actually a new part I put in this presentation yesterday because there's a lot of confusion around that. And the big confusion is first where to find it. Again, it's in the right edge, the settings charm. And then what do you put in there? Most apps will have your permissions there, privacy policy, an about link. But if your app deals with account management, if you want users to sign in, sign out, add multiple more accounts, then you place that in this settings charm. So don't put any login, logout buttons in the bottom app bar on your screen, in the top app bar. Just put it in the settings charm, and users will know where to find these once they onboard the Surface or once they use other apps. So again, this background color is green because the user chose that theme color. But once you're going to click on the sign in button here, you open a custom charm that is part of your app, and you can do whatever you want there in terms of design and background color. So here you can lay out search, or not a search, but a login fields and sign into your app. So again, settings, but also login, logout, and account management, all those things go into the settings charm and not into your bottom app bar. Let's talk about selecting items. We learned this morning that we can select items by swipe select. That's kind of the official term that Microsoft uses for that gesture. So you tap and you swipe a little bit down, and then that item is selected. On iPad, you have different ways to go into kind of an edit mode. In most cases, you have an edit button on the top right, and then your screen goes in edit mode, and then you tap or choose your items where you can perform actions against. So Microsoft, again, starts with the content. Instead of going into an edit mode, you start with your content. You just swipe select a photo, for example, and then your actions appear. While on iOS, you're first going to make a decision like, I'm going to do something with my content, go into edit mode, and then you're going to interact with your content. So again, even in interactions, content is first with Windows 8. This is a little example how it looks like. You can design this differently. It doesn't have to be this triangle at the top. Of course, for consistency reasons, people are used to see that. So I would advise to stay close to it. But if you have, for example, a circular tile, I'll show you later, that's possible, then, of course, it's not going to be a square selection around it. So you can design whatever you want here. You can use whatever colors you want here as well. So once you select an item, the bottom app bar appears, or the bottom and the top bar appears, and you can perform actions against that piece of content. Let's talk a little bit about portrait and landscape mode. On iPad, there's no real guideline around whether to design your app vertically or horizontally scrolling. So it's kind of all over the place. Windows 8 strongly recommends to use horizontal scrolling to design those large panoramic pages. So vertical scrolling, unlike being said this morning, is not really advised. Scrolling in two directions, it's not really user-friendly, so just avoid it and try to wrap your content into a horizontal panoramic view. And the interesting thing is once you turn your tablet, once you go into portrait mode, this navigation direction remains. So you're still going to browse through your content by swiping horizontally. So let's have a look at the Photo Journal app. So this is the landscape view, and this is the portrait view. And you can clearly see that the viewport is suddenly shorter, so you see a little bit less hubs than you see on the homepage. You don't see November, for example. And suddenly you have a lot of white space at the bottom here that you can utilize for various stuff. So how can you leverage that space? The easiest way to do it is just adding more content, just showing more content, showing more comments here, showing more photo tiles. That's one way of filling up that space. Another way is loading related items, for example, or maybe loading a banner. So you can be really creative in what you do extra in your portrait view. It doesn't have to be extra content. You can come up with whatever concept you have in mind. But again, in portrait view, you're also going to swipe horizontally, just like on the landscape view. Now, that brings me to Snap View. And if you look at Snap View, and we started this morning, the only exception is in Snap View because the column is so narrow, you're going to swipe vertically. Your movement should be vertically there. While in Fill View, the app still remains how it was in the full view. On iPad, unfortunately, there's no concept of like multitasking. I mean, you can double-click the home button and go to the other app, but you can never see like apps alongside each other, which is unfortunate. It's really cool that Windows built that in because it opens a lot of opportunities for your app. And a lot of apps will work or should work better in Snap View than in Fill View because it's going to be a companion app with another app. Just think about it. You're making this PowerPoint deck, but at the same time, you want to see how your Nokia shares are doing, for example. Or maybe you need a calculator, and you're dealing with your shares. So you can have your calculator at the left of your screen in a Snap View, and you can have your other app on the right. So think about what added value you can bring if your app lives in SnapView. It's not just this other view that you have to design and develop to comply with the design guidelines. It's an opportunity. It's an opportunity for your app to live or work together with another app. Let's talk about live tiles. If you look at iPad, the tiles are nicely designed. A lot of thought and design time went to that. But they're graphical representations of the app itself, and they're static. The only kind of dynamic part of it is this little red bubbles you have that indicate some kind of numeric value, like two new meals or your cloud score went up, for example. Windows 8 has true live tiles. They're really live. They show content that was added to your app, for example, that show articles that just has been released a minute ago. So you can rotate through a lot of content in those live tiles. And just look at it from like an ABC testing standpoint. You have multiple opportunities to draw in your users into your app. Maybe they're not interested in that first image that you animate into your live tile, but maybe the second image is more appropriate for that user, and then they're going to be enticed to click in. So again, a lot of opportunities to draw your users into opening your app. On iOS, a lot of apps that you install, you just end up not using anymore and just forgetting about. The icon is on your home screen, but just nothing new there. So you have this opportunity in Windows 8 to create more engaging apps or live tiles. So Windows comes with a bunch of templates, live tile templates that you can choose from. These are set, so you cannot change too much. So you cannot change, let's say, the typography. You cannot change it to Comic Sans, luckily. You cannot mix bold and italic and things like that. So you have to choose, as a developer and designer, from those live tiles. And those gray squares here represent images. So if your app is really image-based, if you're dealing with photos or recipes, I advise you to use images. But if your app is around, let's say, email or let's say stocks, you're probably going to go for a live tile that displays lots of text or maybe a key metric like you see in here. So be really creative with those live tiles. Really think about which live tile fits the best. If you go back one slide, this live tile, for example, shows you five images. So if you're an image-based app, you should definitely consider this type of live tile. Now, let's talk a little bit how to create an innovative design. Like I said in the beginning of the presentation, a lot of Windows 8 apps look the same. They all look very kind of squarey. I think designers are not really kind of aware how far they can go away from those guidelines, how to interpret those guidelines. So it's a challenge for designers to see what you can do and what you can't do. And if you go to windowsstores.com/designers, and you click on the Get Inspired block here, you will see a bunch of ID books. That's how Microsoft internally calls these. And ID books are fictive apps that Ratio, for example, created for Microsoft to show how your app could look like in a specific category. Let's start off with one of the apps that we designed. That's not not part of the ID books, because this is a real app that Ratio Interactive designed almost like 6 months ago. So this is an app for a small startup based in Chicago, two people, and the business is going into a forest, taking a mic and recording nature sounds. And in this app, you can enjoy those nature sounds. They'll loop every 20 or minutes or an hour, and you can just get relaxed and enjoy those soundscapes. The first thing you see on the homepage, and this is actually not live yet, we're pushing it live in the store as I speak here, but the older version is in the store. But if you look at this homepage, you see no squares. It's all circles. And once we designed that, we showed it to Microsoft, they're like, interesting. It 100% complies with the design guidelines, and it's completely content before Chrome. It's authentically digital, so but it's possible. So I hope that these next examples I'm going to show are going to inspire you on designing more creative apps than we've done before. If you look at this app, and this is an ID book we created for Microsoft, it's a fictive app around a male store, a male clothing store, and the concept is head to toe. So if you look at the homepage, you immediately see that it's still very kind of squarey. We kind of squeeze the square. And the concept is laid out in those cropped images at the top here. So the concept is that you're gonna shop based on the region on your body. So the left image talks about items for the head, like a head, for example, sunglasses. The second tile refers to what you can wear around your neck. The third one over the shoulder, and the fourth one down to the leg, up to your feet. And there are a lot of more categories that are hidden behind the right edge of the screen. So in order to go to that category, you can either swipe or you can use semantic zoom, like I explained earlier this morning. And in semantic zoom, you suddenly see this person. You don't see any squares anymore. You could have laid out those five hubs into five squares, and that's about it. But that's not really creative. Instead, we just pinpoint the zones onto that body, and you can click on those or tap on those titles to dive into that specific section. Next, you have two ways to use the semantic zoom. You can either dive into that section, or you can take the user on that section in your panoramic page that is underlaying. So if you, for example, tap for the soles, this screen can either scroll to for the soles, or you can decide to dive deeper straight into that topic. Let's have a look at Wingtip Destinations, again, another fictive app that we designed for the travel industry. And what this app shows really well is how creative you can be with your app bars, with the top app bar and the bottom app bar, for example. So see the top app bar, it's not like a straight belt anymore. The bottom app bar is actually split in two to kind of distinguish between the local actions and the global actions. And it's not squarey, it has its nice rounded curves and things like that. Again, try to be authentically digital, so don't try to kind of mimic some real life object, but there is room to do rounded corners, for example. There is room to design a Windows 8 app. It doesn't have to look an out-of-the-box app. Let's have a look at Nasdaq OMX, Director's Desk. This is an app for board of directors. It's a little bit boring app. There's not too much going on. There's only like meeting details and books, PDF reader. So the challenge was here, how can we make this more more fun, more unique looking? And you still see a lot of squares or straight edges, but by using this kind of iceberg effect at the bottom of those tiles, you again create this kind of unique feel. And people will recognize your app from, let's say, from far away. So there is a lot of room to do unique and creative things. Here next to the contacts, you see this little 65 number here that indicates there are 65 contacts available and that draws the user into that hub. You can cut that away, then it will be a little bit harder for the user to know there is anything behind that hub. Let's have a look at Parents, the Parents magazine. It's live in the store. What we did here is we started to overlay tiles, so they don't have to be laid out next to each other. You can just overlay them, and the borders are this little chalk line. Again, a little reference to the real world, but not too much. It's all about that balance that you have there. At the bottom, we have a kind of parallax effect, kind of tricky to do performance-wise on the, especially for the Surface tablet, but we succeeded in making a very smooth experience and the Parents app. So I would advise if you consider a parallax effect, which means if you scroll this content that this graphic scrolls in a different speed, again, test a lot and see whether that's performant on the slower tablets. So there is a little bit design here. There's a little bit of Chrome in terms of this bottom edge. I think it is necessary for brands to be able to communicate their brand values outside of the pure content. So there is some room to introduce some graphical elements, but be really sparse with it. Let's have a look at Comic Director. Comic Director is a comic creator app that we built for Intel. And you immediately see the playfulness of this app. You immediately see that we overlapped tiles. We used different colors. There's this little drop shadow that you have here. Again, the drop shadow is not the smooth shadow. It's still a hard shadow because I believe in like straight edges and solid colors. I think that's present in this app. And if we go into a detail page, you can see what we've done with the bottom app bar. So the bottom app bar overlaps here in the middle and also makes a distinguishing between the local and the contextual actions. Even fonts, you can use whatever fonts you want. Just be careful, not all fonts are embeddable or you're not allowed from a legal standpoint to embed. So you have to check with the legal department there. But again, you don't have to stick with Sigo UI, which is a default Windows 8 font. You can use it and advise to use it, but you can also use whatever other font. I advise to use a thin font that works really well when it's really big and doesn't look too bold. Let's have a look at Wingtip Golf. Again, we came up with a creative bottom app bar. It references the, you know, the atmosphere you get when you're on a golf course. It's kind of glowing edge at the bottom here. For the rest, it's very solid color. There's no like reference to real grass or a texture we use there. So a lot of the things I said is available on the windowsstore.com/designer website, but free from ratio, we try to come up with a different way of communicating design language, and we created this website, windows8designhandbook.com. It's a more visual way of experiencing the manual. It has a lot of do's and don'ts, and we cover a lot of topics like do's and don'ts against live tiles, what you can do with your splash page. For example, don't put your version number in your splash page. Don't put ads in your splash page. It's maybe very obvious for us, but not all designers are aware that you should kind of comply with the rules a little bit. Again, if you comply with the rules, if you master all these topics, your app should be able to get featured in the store. If you decide not to respect the guidelines, your app will still be accepted probably and still be available in the store, but it will probably not be featured or put in the spotlight. So a little bit of advice, you can be stubborn or your clients can be stubborn, like, no, I want this share button in my bottom app bar. Fine, there are a lot of apps that do that, but then know that you're taking a risk of losing business by not being featured in the store. So that concludes my session for today. So I don't know if there are any questions. I would say we have some time left, so go ahead. From a technical standpoint, I don't know, I'm a designer, but at least everything that we come up with as designers, developers have no problem developing it, so I assume it's not that hard.
Actually, you repeat the question, Mark.
The question was whether it's hard to design a custom app bar. And the answer there is that I, as a designer, designed various styles, and developers never complained. They actually encouraged me to come up with creative solutions there.
Do you work with that Visual Studio or Expression Blend?
We all work with Adobe Fireworks. We are going to start with Expression Blend because then you can create your assets that are ready for XAML import, which speeds up the development. But we didn't start it yet, but it has been requested by our developers.
Yes? Repeat the questions, and there's questions on the top from the audience, so make sure you get some of those. Right there, you can read them. Right. Keep asking them.
So a question that maybe is a technical question. You mentioned there's a template you use for the live tile that's on top.
Mm-hmm.
Are those fixed when you submit, or can you change those at runtime to do A/B testing on that kind of stuff as well?
So you can rotate between different live tile templates. So the question is that whether you the decision you make on which lifestyle to use, whether you can change that while your app is live on the user's tablet. And the answer is yes, you can rotate to different lifestyle templates. You can first show an image, rotate to a text-based lifestyle to show, for example, an email that came in, but then you want to show a photo attachment as well. So you can rotate up to three lifestyles. Yes?
So given the guidelines on your own experience, what's been a common UX issue on the side of the user where it's something that is part of the Windows 8 paradigm, but it's just hard for users to pick up or remember to do?
So the question is, which kind of actions are hard for users to remember or to discover? It's kind of hard to tell. I think the hardest part is the titles on top of the hubs, that these are tappable, clickable. Users are not really familiar with clicking on titles. You mostly have a read more piece of text or link. So that's probably the number one thing. Discoverability of search and share. If people are not familiar with Windows 8 and you just give them a tablet in their hands, the first second, they're probably not going to find how to search and share. But again, you have this onboarding process, and once you play with Windows 8 tablet, within seconds you discover that, and once you learn that, you can use that in other apps. Yes?
With the paradigm of Snap, you have apps running side by side, and one of the traditional interactions in Windows is that you can drag and drop things from one window to the other one. Is there such interaction between apps that's running in Snap?
So the question is whether there's interaction between Snap and FillView. And the answer is there's no interaction. So you cannot, for example, drag an item from SnapView and drag it into FillView and then drop it into another app. That is not possible. Their apps live alongside each other, but there is no way to with gestures, do anything between those apps. So they still live separately. Yes? It works exactly the same. So you can select in SnapView. That's a good question. I have to test it out as well. But you can do anything. You should be able to do anything what you do on the in SnapView than what you can do in FillView. There's even an app bar as well. So try to make your experience similar into SnapView. Sometimes there are things that don't work. So that's a good question. For example, yes. Yeah, exactly.
I got a mic here for questions so that you can hear.
Question regarding the settings on the charm bar on the right. Is that going to be only, you can only have it in that default area, or can you move it around to some other location, especially for the logins and the signups accounts?
So, yes, you can put anything anywhere you want, but again, people expect sign in, sign out to live in its settings charm. So you don't have to put it there. You can put it in the app bar. I will not be happy if I see that, but I would not advise it. Once people learn where to find these things, why teach them something different? Why place it somewhere else in your app? Try to be consistent. There's a lot of consistency in Windows 8. If you look at selecting, it's consistent throughout all apps. If you look at the horizontal scrolling, that's consistent. So Microsoft, with their design language, actually helped the user understand apps better. Once you know one app, you can easily use another one. There's another question from Russ that came in to Twitter, I think. The question is, what's the biggest challenge, designing for Windows 8 or designing for iOS? I think designing for Windows 8 is a little bit faster because a lot of time goes into designing this nice, tangible, skeuomorphic designs on iOS. So a lot of time can be sucked into that while on Windows 8, because the layout is so simple, because it's so kind of squarey, it's actually pretty easy and fast to design apps. On the contrary, you have to think about more views. So you have a snap view that you have to design against as well. Your app doesn't automatically snap into that snap view. You have to program against it. You have to design how that screen will look like. You have to think how your app scales on larger screens, and you have to think how your app will look like on different screen resolutions and ported views. So there's a little bit more work in terms of number of screens, but on actual designing the app, there's a little bit less work.
When you were talking about the development of Cookbook, I think it was called, mm-hmm. You mentioned that in the second iteration, you put the See More button because you didn't know the titles were tappable and actionable. I've seen in Windows Phone that a lot of apps don't make them tappable. So mm-hmm. for the user, the tappable and the non-tappable look exactly the same. Like, I know you put like the number of items next to it, but I've seen a lot of apps that don't do that. Would you recommend adding something extra to it to let the user know that it's tappable?
I would not recommend that, because then you're going to teach them the wrong way, right? It's better to teach them the way the design guidelines describe users to do it than to teach them something else, because then suddenly there's two ways to dive into that hub. So I prefer to stick with the tappable titles on Hub and not to introduce any learn more, read more links. We don't want to teach them other things. We don't want to confuse users. We want to just try to stay consistent across apps.
Isn't it more confusing that they tap and nothing happens, and sometimes it does?
Yes, exactly. So you have to design against that. If you have titles that are not tappable, then you should think about those little indicators, like those little numbers next to the title, to let the user know, like, this is actually tappable, this hub has more content behind it, and this one doesn't. You can also use different colors, different font sizes to avoid that problem. So that's more like a design problem than a development problem, actually.
If a title is tappable, you do have a little chevron, the little greater sign. You may notice some apps. Look at the apps. The practice, if a title is tappable, you do have a little chevron that says greater than. You look at the, when I show you default templates, pay attention to that and you'll see it. So we do have an indicator. Definitely staying consistent and not introducing more or new elements is a good practice, as Bart said, because people will get it very quickly. But we do have a little indicator there. And the number is the other typical one that you see.
Why have it tappable if there's no more content?
If there's no more content, then you obviously can tap the title.
So if there's more content, then just put the amount of things, the more things that there is to it, and that's it.
I would advise that, or a little chevron, or other kind of indicators, or maybe you can differ in color. Let's say yellow titles are tappable, white titles are not. I can answer a question that came in to the screen here. Will apps that completely ignore the design guidelines be rejected? That's kind of a hard question to answer. Will they appear in the Windows Store? Yes. But will they be featured? Probably not. So I advise you, if you develop or design an app, make sure you have SnapView, for example. Some apps just didn't think about it. Make sure you comply with the guidelines again. Your apps won't be rejected. The store has a lot of bad apps in there right now, unfortunately. But only the good apps are going to be featured. So it's up to the designer and the user, and designer and the developer to comply with the guidelines or not.
Okay, so another question is, besides screen resolution, what are some other considerations you have to make when designing for multiple hardware devices?
It really depends which how strong the tablet is, the processor is. So right now the Surface tablet only comes in RT version until the Pro launches. That means that things like parallax effects should be avoided, for example. This is more like animation, it's less about design. But if you consider animations, you should definitely test it on lower processor tablets. But in terms of the actual design, you can do exactly the same on whatever tablet you use.
I would add designing for touch, mouse, and keyboard, right? From a Windows standpoint, you see a lot of these new UIs, and they're touch-centric. But we still have that 690 million users that Aaron mentioned. A lot of those only have mouse and keyboard, so make sure that you also consider that. Make sure you can navigate to, you know, through mouse and keyboard. A lot of that comes from free with the controls, so you don't have to think about it, but it's something that if you're looking at differences, I would add that in there for you.
For example, one difference, if you deal with a low-resolution tablet, you see less hubs than on larger screens. So you want to make your hubs not too wide, because you want to show more than one hub on your homepage, so people know there are more hubs and they can scroll. If you make your hubs too wide and on a smaller resolution tablet, people will not be aware that there's more hubs and they won't be invited to scroll. So that's kind of one of the design differences or things you have to keep in mind.
A similar question, but not across Windows devices, but across multiple devices. If I want to design for Android, iOS, and Windows, and maybe BlackBerry, I might like choose a web-based design paradigm and then embed it in containers. Have you thought of that? These apps are all native that you showed, right? Have you thought about this kind of stuff, like the web-based design and then running it in containers? Anything that you guys are doing?
Are you referring into loading web content into a hub in an app?
Yeah, so basically I designed the web content once. I designed HTML5, and then I display, like, let's say, in PhoneGap containers on different devices. Anything, do you have any opinion on that?
I don't have experience with that. I remember we once tried to include Twitter as a hub, which is kind of challenging. I don't advise that because there are going to be links in that content, and then those links will probably open in Internet Explorer, so you're going to take your users away from your app while you had them in your app. So I'll be careful with that. But from a technical standpoint, I have no experience with PhoneGap. I'm a designer, so.
On Windows side, HTML5 is first-class language, as Aaron showed you. So, for example, I can go in, take an HTML website, bring it in, and all my JavaScript, jQuery, all the libraries work fine. So you can write the native app without the need for PhoneGap. You can, you know, get down straight onto the WinRT APIs and get all of this, you know, done. Everything is standards-based, so you will use CSS for your layout, style sheets, and all the techniques that you're familiar with for designing online would still work within your Windows 8 app. So to you, like if you're actually coming from that side, there's a huge amount of reuse. People are very efficient at doing it. It's just a matter of getting started. And then you do have to understand the new paradigm, the new guidelines, and figure out where you want to land, right? You want to be totally different, or you want to be, you know, consistent with Windows 8 and have a little bit of custom UI. So
there's another question that just rolled in. The question is, will you publish Photoshop templates? So on the Windows 8 DesignHandbook.com website, there are Photoshop and Fireworks templates. But also on the official Microsoft websites, there are Photoshop templates. And that allows you to open that template, and you can see where the positioning of the back button is, which kind of paddings to respect, which kind of grids to use. So yes, these are available for designers.
Any more questions? I saw some hands earlier now. Oops.
There's a question in front there.
You're going to go one into the other, right? It's okay.
What about content creation apps? Do you have any really good examples?
Well, the Comic Director app is a content creation app. So you can insert pictures from your tablets. You can insert or drag clip arts in there. You can move them around, delete them, rotate them, and export that and share that with Facebook, for example. So that's a content creation app, if that's what you're referring to.
Yeah, PowerPoint optimized for
it. PowerPoint doesn't have a Windows Store version, so you have to go into the desktop mode and run it from there.
To round trip to his point, actually, I'll throw you a good content creation app that I think is good. WordPress, their whole app is written in HTML. All they have is HTML, JavaScript developers, and the app is open source. So you can go in and look at the source for their app and see how they built it. They've done a couple of articles on telling how they told the story. I know the developers, and it's really great quality app. It's a highly rated app, so it might be a good opportunity for you to see both the whole HTML with layouts and everything, and you know, how do I do some content creation? It's just one. There's a lot in there, so.
If you wanted to design an app that took advantage of the fact that someone might be changing their own theme and you wanted to allow them to integrate their theme into your app design, do they make it relatively easy? So whatever color they chose, you get things like that?
That's a good question. Unfortunately, as a designer, I cannot answer that question, but I'm curious about an answer as well.
So the question is, if you want to design an app where people can customize the themes, how hard is it to do as a developer? And the short answer is, it's very easy. Next, when I get into the tools, you're going to see me do a little bit of that. But there's a caveat with that, which is all of these apps get certified. So even if it's HTML or you know, or SAML or whatever, we do have to go through certification. So what you do is you do have to code for it. So for example, like I have people that ship three themes in their app. Shipping and building three themes, you're going to see in the tools section, is going to be trivial. Having something where the user can select every possible color, it's going to be really hard with regards to you certifying it. But you can definitely do things like a lot of apps say, let you select your own background, let you select, you know, some colors. Even our start screen, if you look at a perfect example is our start screens can be customized. Pay attention as you see all the people come today. Every one of us has a slightly different start screen. Like Aaron had that green, I noticed that. And because I used to have the green not too long ago, and I've moved to the blue recently. So theming is very simple. You're going to see it through the tools. But you do have to be aware of, hey, how much do I let people customize? And you know, have it's kind of like giving them a gun. You don't want them to shoot themselves in the feet, you know, through your app. But it's easy to do. You'll see it on the tools section.
Yeah. That sounds good. I think the question was simpler, and I think you gave me the answer, which was simply, if someone on the outside chose a theme that they liked, and I wanted to allow them to bring that theme into my app, I don't, you know, so it's whatever they, or you like blue, he likes green, someone else likes red, just being able to bring that in so that's consistent with what they like to see at their desktop, if you will.
And just to caveat with that, so make sure I don't confuse you, because I'm very hardcore about not misleading you. The operating system themes are independent from the apps. So our apps by default ship, and I'll show it to you when I get to the tools. I'll make an extra time. Ship with a light and a dark theme, and I'll show you how to customize them. But they're totally independent from the operating system theme. So if I like, you know, I used to like this gray-orange theme, that's not going to turn all my apps orange, right? So they're independent, but we have the functionality where you can build it and you can figure it out and give the user the choice. It's definitely a good differentiator. And you'll see that the platform allows for that very, very easily through either CSS styles or through something called SAML styles.
So I got an interesting question through the screen here. One of the questions was, do you advise designers to design horizontal scrolling websites? I would say no. I mean, the horizontal scrolling is something typical Windows 8, typical tablet usage. The web is something different. Your browser behaves different. The scroll wheel scrolls vertically, so there's no need to suddenly start redesigning your websites to support horizontal scrolling. Those things are totally separate. Another question I just got here, I get frustrated when my designs don't come as planned on different devices. What device would you suggest that I purchase to design on? I would suggest to start designing on the smallest screen, make sure that experience is really well on that screen, and then experience will only be better on larger screens. So try to purchase the smallest tablet. I think the Surface is the smallest tablet from a resolution standpoint right now.
Yep. All our smaller resolution on Windows is, the new devices shipping are all going to be 1366 by 768. We're pretty consistent about that. It's not something we force, but it's something where that's a minimum resolution. The minimum resolution for any app, so if you want to write an app, the minimum resolution that we require in order to launch your app is going to be 1024 by 768. When you launch a 1024, or if the user only has 1024 by 768, they will not be able to snap the application, right? That's the only thing they lose, but your application will look exactly like it would if it was on the failed state. So when you're thinking about designing, two guidelines that I would do is design for 16:9, so design for that widescreen format, and design for a minimum of 1366 by 768. And if you want more data, we have a lot of Windows data that says, hey, here's how millions and millions of users, here's the resolutions, here's what they have, here's what we see. Go ahead.
So keeping with that particular theme, when you create an app, how easy is it to create an app that runs on multiple screen sizes and can adjust itself?
Do you want to take a stab at that one?
So the question is how easy it is to design to support multiple screens.
Design and then implement it, but you probably stick with design.
For design, you have to think what you want to perceive in those larger screens, right? So you can, and it's actually also answering another question, you can just scale up everything. I wouldn't advise that because you don't really use the excess space on that screen, but it really depends what you use that screen for. If you're going to use it from a far distance, then I suggest you scale it. If you're going to use it on your desktop, then I advise you to leverage the extra space. So think about where your app will be used for and which situations, and then design or make design decisions against that.
As a developer, and I'll tell you guys these because you're going to hear me talk about it the next 2 days, and I'm a hardcore developer, so everything is easy. Right, like I thrive on people coming and telling me, oh, this cannot be built. Then I'm like, yeah, sure, I can do it. Let me show you. And then, you know, a weekend later, we'll have something. So so to go back to your question, how easy it is, as a developer, I would tell you it's easy. On Windows, all of our controls are very much from the ground up designed for, very dynamic layouts. So if you're coming from the iOS world, you're used to this pixel perfect positioning. You know, we call it canvas layout, where you position everything at a pixel level. And you're moving now onto these more dockable and dynamic layouts. On our world, we come from the opposite. We're always being dynamic. So you have a lot of that infrastructure. But to be honest, I can tell you it's easy because all of that is taken care of, but you still have to worry about the design and you still have to do work. So it's not a for free for everybody.
So hopefully.
hopefully a closure on this one. In the iOS world and in the Android world, we're focusing on the handheld devices right now. We're likely to move into one that's for a larger screen, for iPads or for the tablets, and we're likely to ship two different apps because of the set of functionality. So I know for sure on iOS, I can say, hey, in the store, this app is for this stuff only. Same thing in Windows world. So can I target particular device sizes?
Yes, you can. Yes. So depending on the device size, you can decide to show more content, to show an extra banner, for example.
Different question. It's in the store, in the iOS store, for instance, I say this app is compatible with iPhone, but not iPad. This one is iPad only, but not iPhone.
Yep. So on Windows, we do not have a capability. So when you design your app, you tell them, you design your app for the minimum requirements, and we don't have a way to filter them where we say, hey, only run this app if you have a 1920 by 1200 display. So you do have to kind of do a little bit more dynamic. Again, the layouts are more dynamic, so things will scale fairly well by default, very much like if you take an iOS app and not do the 2X, but if you take an iOS layout, and you try to scale it by default, it kind of works okay still on iPad, but it's not ideal. We would have something slightly better than that if you do no work, but we don't have a way to filter it. So another point here, and we're going to have to cut in a minute because we got to give you a break and have you come back. So you can always ask Bart and me questions offline. So we do have two different stores. So our Windows store is different from our Windows Phone store. So when you're submitting, you're definitely picking the tablet versus the phone. We don't have that problem. So we're going to talk about that tomorrow and the differences and all that stuff. So you'll see that it is two different stores. But once you've said, hey, I'm in the Windows store, we don't have a way to say, hey, this only runs at 1366 as opposed to it runs at 1920. Let me go ahead. Bart will be here all day, and I'm going to have to cut it. I know there's a lot of really great stuff. We have a panel later at noon where he can answer a few more questions. Anybody, feel free to ask him questions. There's a lot of other Microsoft people you can ask questions. I have to give you guys a break so you can go to the restroom, and then we'll be back here in 12 or 15 minutes. We'll start at 11:15 again. So please come back at 11:15. We're going to get into tools, so you're going to get into seeing a lot more code. For the rest of the day, you get to see a lot more code. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.